What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer. And before we get started, I need to tell you that today's episode is brought to you by RockAuto.com, an amazing selection, reliably low prices, and all the parts your car will ever need. We are two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and I also write for the LA Football Network covering the Chargers as well. And we've been covering the Chargers now for over five seasons, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly during the season. And now this is our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, we have a full packed show for you guys, but first I want to tell you guys about something cool the Locked On Podcast Network is doing, and the statement they are making is the Locked On Podcast Network stands against racism and social injustice. That's why we, the hosts, are making personal donations to local and national organizations that are fighting for change. And in the month of June, Locked On is matching the total of all host donations up to $10,000. To make your own donation along with us, please visit lockedonpodcast.com/Black Lives Matter. All right, guys. So like I said, we have a fun show for you guys. We're going to start with the news that the Chargers came second on a list of the best pass rushing duos in the NFL. So we'll get into that and talk about Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram before getting into the second segment. We'll be talking about an article that is commending Michael Davis for being one of the best at what he does in the NFL, which was a surprise. So we'll get into that and talk about some other parts of the secondary in the second segment before wrapping up the show with an article by Sports Illustrated's Jason Hirschhorn talking about the Chargers changing up their running game. We know there's going to be some big changes, so we'll get a little bit more into what we expect to see and even what we expect the breakdown to be as far as carries go between those three running backs that we all know will make the team. So let's go ahead and get into it. On Tuesday, one NFL analyst ranked the best pass rushing duos in the NFL, and the Los Angeles Chargers were near the top of the list. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. Bleacher Report came out with an article by Maurice Moten talking about the top seven pass rushing duos heading into the 2020 NFL season, and Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram came in second place. We talk all the time about how lucky the Chargers are to have two dominant edge rushers, even though with some of the stats, you wouldn't be able to tell how impactful they really are. On this list, they come in ahead of the likes of Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, as well as a few other very notable pass rushing duos like the Smith brothers from the Green Bay Packers, Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. And I think this is a no-brainer, David, because the Chargers not only have very talented players, but they also have a couple of guys that have been playing together since 2016. And it starts with Joey Bosa, who has really elevated himself to one of the best pass rushers and just one of the best overall defensive ends in the entire league, but especially getting after the passer.
No question about it. I mean, I think when Joey Bosa came into the league, he has shown everybody that he is a pass rush specialist. Maurice Moten said in his article, since 2016, Bosa has recorded 40 sacks, which is tied for eighth, and includes three double-digit sack campaigns. That just goes to show you, he has impacted the sack department for the Chargers in every year that he has been in a Chargers uniform. He is a two-time Pro Bowler, which happened to be in both the years that he was healthy and played 16 games. He also has had at least 67 tackles in both of those healthy years. Last year, he led all defensive ends in run stops and finished with 11.5 sacks. So Joey Bosa is such a well-rounded player. Just good to hear that another analyst is touting his incredible abilities, Daniel.
Yeah, and it didn't even stop there. It wasn't even just leading all defensive ends in pressures. He also ranked fourth in quarterback knockdowns with 16 and fourth in hurries as well with 25. So any metric that you look at as far as rushing the passer, Joey Bosa is going to be near the top of it. He was also third in pass rush win rate last season as well. Both Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram were in the top 10 in pass rush win rate in 2019, even though Ingram only ended up with 7 sacks. But he is the other part of this pass rushing duo, and he's another guy that does a lot for the team besides rushing the passer. Daniel Jeremiah, as part of this article, took a look at how Joey Bosa gets helped out so much by Melvin Ingram when he is a standing rusher, because offensive lines just don't know where he's going, creating one-on-one matchups with Joey Bosa and the right tackle. But Melvin Melvin Ingram has come a long way since he entered the league, David, and now, at least over the past few seasons, he still has been one of the better edge defenders in the league.
No question about it. I think, obviously, when Melvin Ingram came into the league with the Chargers as a highly touted first-round pick, everybody was expecting big things. Unfortunately, they did not get that right away. He only had 6 sacks in his first 3 seasons, although it is important to mention that he only played in 29 of a possible 48 games. Although the last 4 seasons, Melvin Ingram has definitely turned it on. He's had 32.5 sacks. The last 4 seasons, he has also made 3 straight Pro Bowls and has had 49 sacks in his career. I think Melvin Ingram having those 3 straight Pro Bowls is just recognition of the fact that he is not afraid to do the dirty work. He is also not afraid to take on double teams, triple teams to open things up for Joey Bosa and give him more opportunities. It's not just getting the sacks that makes it important. It is how do you affect the game and how can you help your other teammates get to the quarterback just like you do.
Well, and I think many people would look at the 7 sacks and wonder why they are still on this list, because between the two of them, 18.5 sacks, there were 2 guys in the NFL that had more than that last season, but both these guys were getting wins in their one-on-one matchups. Unfortunately for the Chargers, they gave up a 70% completion percentage against their secondary and linebackers, which doesn't help a pass rush, and they also didn't have much help on the interior. There was no interior defensive lineman for the Chargers last season that had more than 3 sacks, so they need a little bit more help for those other guys, for them to do much better than the 28th in the league they were last season in total sacks. But we do have 2 more segments to get into. We're going to be talking about Michael Davis being an unsung hero for the Chargers and also wrapping the show up by talking about the changes to the Chargers running game. But first, I need to tell you guys that we have all been made a fool of when talking about cars outside of our depth. I do not know a bunch about cars, so I find myself in this position often where I just don't know if I'm getting the best price when someone tells me I need a certain part, and I can fix that for you with rockauto.com. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money, and we can all relate to that, especially now with everything going on. And there's no better place to do that than rockauto.com, who's a family business serving auto part customers online for 20 years. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic daily driver, get everything you need in only a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. All you got to do is go to rockauto.com right now and see all of the parts available for your car or truck, and make sure you write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need at rockauto.com. All right, so for the second segment, I want to get into an unsung hero for the Chargers. According to one article, Doug Farrar was taking a look at the NFL's best zone coverage cornerbacks, and one Charger made the list, and it's probably not the one you would originally think of if you're talking about corners for the Chargers getting commendation. It was actually Michael Davis who was the Chargers' best player in zone coverage in 2019, which is a pretty big surprise to a lot of people. I mean, me especially. I mean, we have given Michael Davis a lot of grief, you know, through different podcasts, and we're definitely able to own up when there are certain parts of his game that he excels in. And in this case, he comes in 11th on the list of 11, but still, I mean, this is the weak spot of the Chargers secondary, and he's on the same list as guys like Tre'Davious White and Stephon Gilmore and Richard Sherman, just to name a few of the guys that also show up on this list. So, David, I mean, obviously, we'll get into some of the flaws of Michael Davis's game as well, but when you put it like he does in this article, it is easy to recognize that Michael Davis was pretty good in zone coverage last season.
And for as much as we pick on Michael Davis and all the negative things about his game, it is really nice to actually see somebody point out something positive besides his tall, lanky frame and his 4.34 40. It's nice to see something else. He says Davis allowed 19 receptions on 34 targets for 254 yards, no touchdowns, 2 interception, and a positive play rate of 50% when playing in zone coverage. So that just goes to show you that he has put that speed and length to good use in zone coverage and had some success. And it is important to note that last year was the first time he had ever got his hands on a football in his 3 seasons in the NFL. So hopefully that is a sign for the future for him to get his hands on more footballs. But hey, I love the credit for Michael Davis playing in zone. It's definitely something that is a nice, refreshing change, Daniel.
Well, especially when Gus Bradley plays so much zones, you know, so it's like, it's one thing to play good only when you're playing zone coverage, but when you play zone as much as Gus Bradley does, it makes a much bigger difference. And what he's saying here is that he has the tools that make corners, you know, able to play well in zone coverage. You have to be able to chase guys down. Sometimes you have to be able to play in a retreat position and try to catch up to the football in a lot of situations. And Michael Davis's issues have never been his speed. I mean, he's probably the fastest corner the Chargers have. I mean, he is the fastest corner that the Chargers have. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But his issues have been more with getting his head around and also with being able to tackle players when he needs to. And I think that's one of the things that obviously doesn't pop up on this list, David, is just his ability to tackle, which has been not very good and not very willing at times. And I guess that's just me. One of my pet peeves is just corners who don't like to tackle. And I think a lot of the times you see Michael Davis trying, but tackling and getting his head around are two things that haven't been a strength of his.
I mean, to be honest, it's been his biggest detractors. I mean, it's just, it's so frustrating to watch him too, because he's always there. It's not like he's not in good position as far as his body is concerned, but you got to be able to locate the football to be able to make a play on it, and also to be considered to be covering the right way, because if not, you put your hands up and your head's, you know, looking at the wide receiver, then 10 times out of 10, you're going to get a pass interference penalty called against you. And unfortunately for Michael Davis, that happened a lot, and when opposing teams realized that he had a tendency to do that, they targeted him and they took advantage of that. So whenever he did get his head around and he was able to locate the football, he has good ball skills and he has shown the ability to make plays, but that has been such a big problem. And of course the tackling, I hate corners that seem uninterested in making the tackle when, hey, you're playing football. This is a physical game. It is part of it. You can't just look for the interceptions and all the splash plays. You got to get down and dirty and you got to square up ball carriers and receivers. And unfortunately for Michael Davis, that has been something he absolutely has to improve on if he wants to take his game to the next level.
And just to give you a little bit of a sample size, last year Michael Davis missed 15.2% of his tackles, which was 7 tackles. But when you're out there on the edge, you don't have a lot of help. So those missed tackles become much more magnified in those situations, and you're just put on an island a lot of times. And he's never going to be a physically imposing run defender, but you definitely think he could get to a spot where he's at least competent as a run defender, and I think that would make me feel a lot better about him as a player. But last year only allowed a 59% completion percentage, where the Chargers as a team gave up over 70. He only allowed 6.6 yards per target and a 76 passer rating against him. So he definitely had a better year, especially when the year before that the rating against him was 101.6 and he gave up 3 touchdowns. So I think,
and 62.7 on the completion percentage, so it dropped to 59, so at least he's showing improvement as well.
Yeah, he definitely is showing improvement. And I think what you're seeing from this as well is the only 2 touchdowns that he gave up, since he gave up those 2 touchdowns, were in man-to-man coverage. And I think that's the next kind of issue, is how can he adjust when the Chargers are talking about playing more man-to-man coverage in 2020? Is he still going to be able to put up numbers like that? And will he still be able to, you know, remain a starter? Because there was times where, you know, he wasn't really a starter even before, and you weren't ever sure if he was going to be an average NFL starter. So if they go more man-to-man, is that going to expose more of those things, like not being able to turn his head around and things like that? And I think that those are the biggest kind of question marks about him going into this season. Obviously, tackling has to improve, but how will he adjust to the changes that they're making to this defense? But David, I think when you see this, one of the things that kind of gives you hope is this is the weak spot of the Chargers defense and the Chargers secondary, specifically that one cornerback position. I mean, you look at the slot, you see that Chris Harris Jr. is there now. You look at the other side, it's Casey Hayward Jr. So if this is your worst corner and he is still able to do this in zone coverage and play up to that level, that's not that bad.
Well, yeah, I mean, especially because when we look around the secondary, we're looking at one of the most talented secondaries in the NFL, and even the weakest part of the secondary, at least from our perspective, is getting highlighted in a positive way. So it just goes to show you how much potential and how much talent this side of the ball has. But I also was going to point out for Michael Davis, I think that he's really going to have some competition because there is so many pieces that the Chargers have on the defense at their disposal, and they need to try to figure out how they can get those pieces on the football field. So he might get pushed a little bit. They've been talking about Nazir Adderley possibly moving out there to corner. And hey, I mean, we know that he's got great ball skills and good feel, but we don't know if he can play corner. But if he can transition those ball skills and speed to corner, then I think Michael Davis might have some things to worry about.
Well, I think Michael Davis would feel a lot more worried if the guy they brought in Chris Harris Jr., didn't just have his worst year, you know, since his rookie season playing mostly on the outside. And also if they had any legitimate competition there that only played outside cornerback. Because right now, what is his competition that has actually played, you know, outside cornerback well? I mean, Chris Harris Jr., they say is going to play mostly in the slot. At least that's what we've heard up till this point. Outside, he wasn't very good. And now you're looking at the next guy up being Brandon Faison. I mean, that's not going to strike fear into the hearts of anyone. So I think he's honestly lucky he doesn't have more competition for that position. We'll see how they move guys around. But there's no guys that really have played outside and played well at the NFL level right now, besides, you know, Chris Harris Jr. at times, who they want to play in the slot. So I think he actually is lucky that way. But I think another part of this would be how he plays in the red zone. Obviously, last year he gave up 2 touchdowns in man-to-man coverage. But in the red zone in 2018, according to Pro Football Focus, Davis notched the 4th best passer rating when targeted, 42.4. He didn't get any interceptions that year, but he got the job done by not allowing any of his opposition to reel in any of his 4 contested red zone targets. So that's him contesting balls in the end zone and not getting flagged on them, which I think is obviously going to be a very important thing. But obviously you want Michael Davis to play well, and Michael Davis has all the incentive to play well because, like you all know, they only put him on a tender that is only a 1-year deal. If he, you know, gets 4 or 5 interceptions this year, he will get absolutely paid, and I don't think you really would have seen that market for him in the 2020 offseason. So the Chargers need him to be good, and if he wants to get that back, he's going to need to be good as well because he has all the opportunity in front of him. He's going to have the first shot at the starting lineup, and he can really take advantage of it and get paid. But we do have one more segment I want to get into, talking about an article discussing the changes we could see in Shane Steichen's new run offense. But first, I need to tell you guys about the best protein bar on the planet. And of course, I'm talking about Built Bar, which comes in 20 amazing flavors. It's a protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. And when you're talking about protein bars, you want all the high protein. You don't want the sugars or the calories, and that's what's going to help with Built Bars. They're also very low in net carbs as well, but most importantly, you want it to taste good, and they all taste good. They're all soft and easy to chew, and we can even save you guys some money. We are actually doing a special offer right now because Built Bar is donating all of the profits this week to charity, and they're also going to save you 50% off your order with the promo code LOCKEDON, all caps, one word. You can get 50% off your order at builtbar.com with the promo code LOCKEDON. All right, so in the last segment today, I wanted to talk about an article I saw from Jason Hirschhorn, who writes for Sports Illustrated, a former guest of the show, a guy that we really like and was very cool to us and very generous with his time for us. But at the same time, he wrote an article talking about the biggest changes to the Chargers running game in 2020. So I was excited to see his take on it. I honestly didn't think there was a ton on there about the Chargers running game specifically, but I did think there was some good notes that I wanted to get into. So obviously Shane Steichen is taking over, and so is Tyrod Taylor, which is going to mean very different things for the Chargers this season. Not only did they run the ball much more under Shane Steichen last season, but they also don't have Phillip Rivers now to just say, hey, throw the ball 40 times a game. I mean, that's never going to be the game plan with Tyrod Taylor, you hope. And if that is the game plan, the Chargers are going to be in trouble. But one of the main differences we saw last year with the departure of Ken Whisenhunt and the addition of Shane Steichen, who did not have very much time to really change very much to the offense, it still paid big dividends for them, specifically in the running game, because the Chargers were abysmal rushing the football. He mentions in this article that leading up to the change in offensive coordinator, the Chargers had 4 straight games not eclipsing 40 rushing yards, which is just about some of the worst numbers that you'll ever hear. I mean, I've never seen it on another team. I know it was historic how bad they were. But David, the Chargers were much better at running the football under Shane Steichen, and you really saw it in the results and the production.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. When you kind of jump into the numbers a little bit, it really paints a very clear picture of improvement from Ken Wisenhunt to Shane Steichen. So under Wiz, there's 160 rushing attempts for 556 yards through the first eight games, which is good for a 3.4 yard per carry average. Not great. Not great at all. I mean, that's the first thing that came to my mind was, yeah, that, I mean, pretty much league average. You want it to be around four. Now, under Steichen, things significantly improved. Also, the rushing attempts went up too. But so it's 206 rushing attempts for 897 rushing yards, which was good for 4.3 yards per carry average. So almost a full yard better under Steichen, and about six more attempts per game. They ran the ball more, but they had a lot more success as well.
They had 200-plus yard rushing games under Ken Wisenhunt, and they were the first two games of the season. It looked actually pretty promising, but the next six games before he lost his job, they never eclipsed 93 rushing yards, which is what the least amount of yards was for Shane Steichen in six of the next eight games after he took over. The Chargers also put up rushing totals of 159, 156, 115, and 195. You just weren't seeing those numbers from the Chargers before, and this is not just a issue that has plagued the Chargers last season. I mean, the Chargers have been abysmal rushing the football, which is why they ended up taking Melvin Gordon in the first round. That didn't end up working out. And I think that's another important aspect of this is the Chargers go into this without Melvin Gordon, and he played for the final eight games that Shane Steichen was the offensive coordinator. But honestly, I think it'll be a net positive. I don't think you will see, you know, a lesser rushing attack without Melvin Gordon. Obviously, I think he has some characteristics that you don't necessarily have with the guys in the Chargers, but I don't think the Chargers won't be able to run the football because of a lack of talent. One of the things he also mentioned in this, they were saying that the Chargers, he used an article from ESPN and from analyst Mike Clay talking about Shane Steichen, saying Shane Steichen called plays for eight games for the Chargers last season following Ken Wisenhunt's dismissal. Los Angeles switched from a very pass-heavy to a very run-heavy offense with an absurd 35% of the team's targets directed towards running backs. So those are all passing numbers, really. They went on to list a bunch of passing numbers, but what I took from it was the Chargers didn't throw the ball as much, but when they did, they decided to take deeper shots, and the kind of passing plays they were running were much different. And David, even Ken Wisenhunt didn't shy away from throwing to running backs by any means, but the Chargers definitely put that, you know, as a focal point of their offense, and I think it'll, you know, stay that way with guys like Justin Jackson and Austin Ekeler in the backfield.
Well, and it should. I mean, Austin Ekeler was one of your biggest playmakers last year, and he definitely was one of Phillip Rivers' outlets, and it resulted in great success. He had almost 1,000 yards receiving as a running back. So not only did the running backs get more carries, but they got more receptions as well and was very productive with that. Now that the signal caller is going to change with Tyrod Taylor under center and Phillip Rivers on to Indianapolis, I would expect that those rushing numbers are going to even go up even further, because we know Tyrod Taylor is a lot more careful with the football, and also Anthony Lynn's offenses with Tyrod Taylor in Buffalo, they ran the ball a lot. So I expect that blueprint to carry over here with the Chargers.
I think it will as well. I think the one question, especially from this article, will be, can Tyrod Taylor still be the quarterback that's pushing the ball down the field more? Because like he mentions in this article, the passing volume was down, the aggressive downfield throwing was up, and the plan seemed to work. Phillip Rivers ranked 7th in yards per attempt and 12th in completion percentage the rest of the season. The Chargers wide receivers ranked 1st in average depth of target, 13.9 yards. That meant on any average passing play, the receiver was an average of 14 yards down the field, which is a huge number, and they were 6th in yards per target, which was 9.4. The tight ends followed right behind that with an average depth of target of 9.1, so they were definitely pushing the ball a little bit more downfield. Can Tyrod Taylor keep that up? Does that fit to his strengths? Not necessarily, but we also don't know how much this offense is going to change. So one of the things that it does mention in this article is that the Chargers will be running much more play action. They'll be putting the pistol offense into their offensive playbook as well. And Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert have both, used that offense before in college or in the NFL. So they are very familiar with that. But the one thing it doesn't talk about is the Chargers changing to a more zone running scheme. And this is something that we saw before with the Chargers, but I think we're going to see a lot more of it going into 2020. And I think, honestly, it fits what the Chargers running backs, at least their top two running backs, their returning running backs, do very well, which is get moving, get the offensive line moving, get on the outside, let them find a crease and explode through that crease, and now they're in the open field. And I think moving to that especially kind of lessens what the problems are on your offensive line, because if you're going in a man running scheme, you need your guys to get push off of the ball. You need them to be blowing the defensive line off the line of scrimmage, and I don't think that's what the Chargers' strengths are right now. So they're really running their head into a wall with that at times, just trying to run right up the gut. I don't think we'll see as much of that this season. And David, I think that zone running scheme, getting on the outside, will only mean even, you know, higher yards per carry potentially. You won't see Austin Ekeler just, you know, getting stuffed right at the line of scrimmage trying to run up the A gap. I think it really will exemplify what these running backs do well.
Yeah, not only what the running backs do well, but what the offensive linemen do well. I think the Chargers have an athletic group of offensive linemen that can definitely get out there and run a little bit, and I think it really just lends more to their strengths. And like you mentioned, to the running backs as well. Both those running backs you mentioned were two of the more elusive running backs in the NFL. Whenever Justin Jackson was on the field, he was making somebody miss. Whenever Austin Ekeler was on the field, he was making somebody miss, breaking tackles and getting more yards. They both excel in the open field. I think when you give them more opportunities to go out there and find their hole and make that decision on their own, when they got big guys in front of them so they can kind of map out their route, I think their vision is both very, very strong, and I think that plays very well in a zone run blocking scheme. I think it's only going to help their rushing numbers improve as long as they can stay healthy and stay on the football field.
And I think another thing it's going to do for them as well is just help minimize pass rush too, because if you're getting these big-bodied defensive linemen having to run sideline to sideline, that is going to tire them out, is going to make them think twice before just shooting up the field, because that's going to create a big hole in that zone running scheme for a running back to get through and potentially get chunk yardage, because Justin Jackson was one of the best at getting chunk yardage last year in the NFL. He was leading the league in yards per carry before he ended up having injuries derail his season. But that's obviously a huge part of this, is keeping these guys healthy. It's not as if Melvin Gordon was the poster child for healthiness and durability, but Austin Ekeler has had injuries. Justin Jackson's only played two seasons. He's been riddled with injuries. Now you have Josh Kelly, but he's a rookie too. So we saw last year that Shane Steichen ran about 26 times per game. I think that number could easily go up with not having to have Phillip Rivers try to check it around 30 to 40 times per game. So based on an average, David, of 30 rushing attempts per game, how do you think that splits up in this running back committee?
Yeah, I mean, I know that everybody's saying, hey, Ekeler is going to be the bell cow back or the number one back, but I honestly think, I don't know why, but something's really just been telling me that Josh Kelly is going to get the bulk of the carries. I think a lot of those are going to be in between the tackles. That might change now with the zone blocking scheme, but my first initial reaction is Kelly getting 12 carries of the 30, and then you go to Ekeler getting 10, and then you got Justin Jackson getting 8. I think Justin Jackson doesn't need to get a lot of touches to be really super effective in the running game. You definitely need to incorporate him, and also I think giving him the least amount of touches is another effective way to hopefully keep him healthy.
And I think you could see him on a pitch count, and I think the Chargers coaching staff have been vocal about, hey, you know, we really want this guy to be a big part of the offense, but he has to show us that he can stay on the field. And obviously, in an ideal world, if injuries weren't an issue, you'd be trying to get Justin Jackson the ball 20 times a game just because he is so prolific with the ball in his hands and he can make so many big things happen. But I trust the Chargers, you know, and take them at their word when they say that Austin Ekeler is the lead running back. And we've seen them try to force feed their lead running back with Melvin Gordon many times. So I do think that Austin Ekeler will lead this team in carries. I think it'll be a lot closer. I think it will be more of a timeshare. But if we're going based off 30 rushing attempts per game, I would say that Austin Ekeler gets 14 of those, and Josh Kelly and Justin Jackson get 8 apiece on average. I think obviously Josh Kelly could be used more in specialty situations, short yardage situations, goal line situations, which Austin Ekeler has struggled with in years past. And I think it'll end up, you know, somewhat averaging out around 8 attempts per game. And I mean, that's 30 rushing attempts a game, guys. I mean, that's a lot of rushing attempts. There's just only so many carries to be given out. So I think Austin Ekeler will lead the Chargers in rushing attempts in 2020. I think that it won't be a Melvin Gordon type of workhorse load, but I definitely think he will be the lead guy. Justin Jackson will be that change of pace guy, the guy that, you know, comes in there and can give a spark to your offense, and he has excelled at that. And I think Josh Kelly does the dirty work, but I would expect to see a lot of Austin Ekeler as well on first down. And we still could see some Austin Ekeler in the slot, even though they have some more legitimate third wide receiver options. I still think if you're not using him as a receiver, you're still not getting the most out of him. And the Chargers are, you know, probably going to run a lot more pistol this year, getting more running backs on the field. So we'll see how that plays out as well and how that affects the rushing averages and who is getting these touches. But I do expect a much improved season-long rushing total from the Chargers and a much more run-heavy offense going into 2020. But that is going to wrap things up on today's show. Thanks to everyone who checked in with us today. Until next time, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers, as well as subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts or giving us a follow on Spotify. We would really appreciate it. If you want to get your voicemails on the show, the number is 323-524-7924, and every Chargers voicemail gets played on the show. We'll be back with you guys on Friday, but until then, take it easy and go Bolts.